Sounds like we're live. Greetings. Welcome to As You Wish Talk Radio.
Wonderful.
If you're a long-time listener, you can probably tell that I'm not James Gilliland. My name is Nate, and I work here at the ranch. I'm going to be guest hosting again this evening. James is away on vacation at an undisclosed location. It will remain that way. So without any further hesitation, let's begin the galactivation. And folks, you know, just because James isn't here, it's not an excuse to turn the radio off tonight because we have quite a tremendous guest. And folks, tonight's guest is the real deal. And by real deal, what do I mean by that? Well, you know, he's not a big name. He doesn't have a book. He doesn't have a DVD. He doesn't have a website, maybe. But he's an articulate young man that is highly motivated and, in my opinion, very activated and is doing extraordinary things. I'm talking about Mr. Benjamin Cavallari. Benjamin, he's a friend of the East City Ranch, and he's a volunteer here for the 2010 Summer Conference. Now, Benjamin, he's an environmental scientist who teaches classes ranging from globalization and technology, environmental earth sciences, sociology of community, scientific revolutions, and science and spirituality at colleges in and around Burlington, Vermont. He's also taught astronomy, earth system sciences, and a myriad of environmental classes focusing on changing human interactions with earth systems through time. And, you know, his research has led him to a number of different locations, Jamaica, New Zealand, Antarctica, all over the place. But he has deep interest in paradigm shifts in both the individual and entire civilizations, as well as interest in how emerging technologies will shape our world. Benjamin truly enjoys introducing students to the unlimited potentials of their own minds and imaginations, and through his classes conveys to individuals that the extent of scientific understanding is often the beginning of where true exploration begins, and to never be afraid, regardless of what the status quo says about any subject, to investigate for yourself what exists in your own world and beyond. So, you know, with that being said, I'd also like to say that, you know, I know this guy personally. I've known him for a number of years. We met under extraordinary circumstances. We've had a number of adventures. And I got to actually attend a number of his classes last year. And, you know, I was just thoroughly impressed with his ability to just cram so much non-conventional topics or subversive information into his classes, but make it accessible and, you know, really, really push his students to think outside the box. And so tonight, we're going to bring him on. We're going to kind of talk about this, about making you know, some of the topics that people that might listen to the show are thoroughly interested in. And, you know, it's a pretty common thing that sometimes we might have a hard time talking about some of these subjects to our friends or family. And on a brief note, you know, I'm not advocating that we need to go out and spread the gospel and awaken everybody else. You know, that's not, from my perspective, that's not necessarily our job. If we focus on our own awakening, our own transcendence, first and foremost, we do our own inner work, and that's going to reverberate out into the quantum field, and ultimately that is affecting everyone else. But, you know, when we see that there's the chance for us to help seedlings grow or to germinate, you know, when there's somebody that truly is interested, you know, it's great if we can be an inspiration to them. And so, you know, I have a couple of quotes really quick of Mr. Benj. He's going to speak for himself here in a second, but I wanted to read these. These are his quotes on his approach. And he says, "Waking people up sometimes is just helping them formulate the thoughts that they already have in their minds. If you dump your total understanding on someone in one sentence, then you're going to lose them completely. I like building roads, not walls, in people's minds." You know, and that brings to mind a comment that, or a message that we've received here at the ranch from Baba G, when he said, "Don't water seedlings with a fire hose." And so, without further ado, I'd like to bring Mr. Benjamin on. Benjamin, are you with us?
Excellent, Mr. Nate. Yes, it's a pleasure and an honor to be here. And you know, I really appreciate you giving me a chance to just talk with the community and. Yeah, and to spread some ideas out there. You know, given the caliber of guests that you have on the show, it really is an honor for when you called me up and said, "Hey, would you like to do this?" Apparently, Papa James is out of town. He left the keys on the ranch, and we're going to take it for a spin, and hopefully we won't burn the place down. And I really just appreciate the chance to just talk, you know, with you tonight.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Likewise, I do too. You know, and I got to throw out big love to James. Whether he hears this or not, you know, we're all thinking of him. We all love him, and I as well. And I'm very, very stoked at this opportunity. And thanks for, you know, coming on with us at kind of a short notice, Benj. So let's kick it off, though, man. Will you elaborate on your approach, your perspective on your teaching method, and, you know, inspiring or encouraging people to learn to grow, expand, and you know, whether you're speaking to students or whether you're just speaking to everyday folks in your life?
Well, you know, there's a couple things about my particular situation. I am a teacher, and I'm fortunate enough to teach to young adults and at the adult level in higher education. You know, that being said, certainly, you know, if I was a teacher in a standard state curriculum, I would probably have a lot more restrictions and regulations on what I can say. But when you're handed, you know, the opportunity to teach a class on environmental sciences, which is so broad-ranging. When you're able to teach a class on science and spirituality, which I don't know what doesn't fall under the sun of science and spirituality, you have the ability to really kind of reach in different directions. And when it comes to putting topics into a curriculum, you know, again, because I have the latitude with these subjects to breach a lot of different topics, oftentimes it's not a matter of, like you said in the introduction, just slamming somebody with a whole thesis statement on a very esoteric topic, a very taboo, what can potentially be taboo topic in culture. Instead, I find that oftentimes all you really have to do is throw out a hook and find something that people can actually already connect to in their world. For example, just as an example, you know, if I was teaching a class, science and spirituality, I wanted to get into mind-body connections. I wanted to start talking about, you know, consciousness studies and whatnot. And if you just start going straight down into Eastern mysticism, you start delving into topics that about the yogis and the gurus have been mentioning, or even mentioning things as deep in the other fields like quantum mechanics, you know, you can lose people. And some of us are always so excited to engage people on what we know, really waking up their minds introduce them to our topics, but we really just go full bore into these things, and you can lose people immediately. We all have had that experience, and could be with family members.
I had a ton of them.
Oh yeah,
back in the day,
yeah.
Definitely, man.
We
yeah.
all do, and I don't know what it is, but maybe as a teacher, I guess I didn't realize I was training myself through a couple of years to find ways to get people to engage different topics, and I've learned that you have to ease them into it, but specifically with esoteric topics. With, like I said, sometimes it's just taboo topics. If you throw a hook out there that people can relate to and you start to build off of that, you can find in a very short amount of time you can get to these specific subjects that you're talking about, but they'll be with you when you're there. And an easy example is to say, "Hey, has anybody ever taken yoga?" And you know, a bunch of hands will go up. "Yeah, sure, yeah, we take yoga." It's like, "Oh, yeah." You know, or any of you, you know, guys take martial arts or something like that. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, they're quick to associate with that. It's something that is pretty much expanding in our culture, in the Western cultures, and it's not so not as taboo to talk about yoga as it was not too long ago. I mean, it's all over public, you know, culture, and you just see it in many facets of people's lives. So, okay, good. We've got, you know, you talk about yoga. And have you ever gotten to that point at the end of your yoga lesson, hour of, you know, really strenuous hard work, like focused, meditative breathing, really concerted effort, and you get to this point where, you know, you feel this union, a real strong bind between your mind and your body. Maybe you're so concentrating on your breath, you feel at peace with yourself. You feel really connected to many facets of your mind-body connection. You know, like, how did Bruce Lee, for example, a master of martial arts, be able to have such control over his mind and his body such that he could move faster than you could think? It was more reactionary. He could literally flow like water. You know, I mean, you can, and you say, well, yeah, I have. At the end of my yoga class, I felt like I was sinking into the floor. I felt like I was everywhere in the room around me. I felt hyper-conscious. All my worries went away. I could listen to my thoughts. You know, if you find that area that you can meet on, together you can build on that and move forward and deeper into subjects, even if that is very much a very basic foundation to work off of. And because my interests have always been in these very, you know, very far-reaching subjects, things like, gee whiz, you know, some of the ancient megalithic structures on the planet and their astronomical alignments and how that suggests, you know, advanced building techniques, maybe advanced technologies, maybe suggestive of intelligences other than that which traditional archaeology would suggest. You know, if I want to get there and start talking about maybe some of these alternative theories to Stonehenge, Newgrange, Serpent Mound in Ohio, something like that, you know, you gotta start off at an area where they can connect to, and then you'll go work together right up to these very deep subjects, and they will be go, go, go. And how many times in the past, I'll, you know, give a lecture on, shall we say, urban development in, you know, as a part of environmental sciences, and then say, you know, we've been doing this for thousands of years. Let's take a look at, you know, Teotihuacan, or let's take a look at Angkor Wat, you know, in Cambodia, and you show them the map, and you show them and say, hey, you know, what's really interesting about this is the fact that some people have noticed that Angkor Wat, it happens to be aligned like a celestial map printed on the right up on the city. That which perfectly depicts, you know, the constellation of Draco. Okay, there seems to be an understanding that the Draco constellation was understood for to be represent the dragon, the serpent in the sky. Same thing the Greeks represented on the other side of the planet. Angkor Wat is 7,000 years old, 5,000 BC. How do you think that, you know, these cultures, which as far as our current scientific explanation will tell us, they didn't have any communication across the other side of the planet. How do you think that they both recognized the same, you know, constellations in the sky such that they would expend such immense caloric energy to build an entire city irrigation complex to mimic the pattern in the sky and then go and make all of their architecture indicative of, you know, the dragon serpent. And, you know, this is 5,000 BC, ladies and gentlemen, such that, you know, for us to have to do an endeavor like this would take, you know, significant billions of dollars. And let's just see what the current explanation, you know, tells us about what the reasoning behind the whole development of Angkor Wat is. It's, you know, linked to the cardinal points of the planet. It's very holy and sacred location on the surface of the Earth, and then all of the other examples of that around the planet. And then you show them, you know, here's the explanation. Do you really, you know, believe that? You walk through the argument, you show them, you introduce the subject to them based on some kind of connection. Like I said, you know, we plan cities today in urban design. But we've been doing it for thousands of years. We, you know, planned out the map of Chicago. We have maps of New York and Washington and different cities, and you walk them through why we design things intelligently, but we've been doing it for a very long time. And then you introduce a topic to them that they didn't know about, but all of a sudden it just dawns on them. They see the complexity of it. They can go there in their mind because, you know, they're thinking about building cities and smart, planning something smart, but why the influence of how it was given to these people to build a city like that back then, and all of a sudden have all of these linkages to, for example, something in the sky, it's like, wait a minute, there's something you're not telling us here. This could potentially be a subject that is far deeper than the official explanation. So that's just one example, or a couple, actually, you know, of how you start at a base you can all stand on, and then try to build to go somewhere else, like any good curriculum, I guess. But if you want to talk to your mom about, frankly, about, you know, these areas that you're going to in your mind, these subjects you're studying, maybe you can root it in something that she's familiar with. For example, like, you know, mom's taking yoga. It's like, hey, mom, you know, I'm doing something like that too, and I'm using meditative practices to work, focus on healing or on, I don't know, remote viewing or something like that. You gotta meet them in the middle somewhere, and then together progress to where your end point is.
Yeah, I think that's really important is to, like, you know, tailor the vocabulary or the way that we would talk about certain subjects based on the individual and where they're at in their consciousness. You know?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, definitely.
It obviously, like, yeah, you got to build up if people aren't aware, if they haven't done the research, you know. Or
yeah, that's
you
know, true. But
you're gonna change your delivery if you're talking with somebody that's well versed in the subject.
That is very true. And not to interrupt, but to say I will tell you, you'll never know who you're really, you know, sitting next to on any given day. I don't know how many times I've had a friend tell me, like, oh yeah, we're sitting at work, and normally I would hear this girl say, like, oh, you know, the conversation's around the water cooler, the proverbial water cooler, so lowbrow, you know, and she's really in depth with many of these subjects, and we talk extensively on this, and I watch her interaction with our community where we really engage these topics real deep. And all of a sudden, one day, one of her colleagues walked up to her and said, did you know that this, this, and this? And it was probably because he saw it on the Discovery Channel. They seem to be getting a little bit more, they're getting a little more brave with some of the subjects that they're tapping into in the public entertainment sector, like, you know, ghost hunters and UFO chasers and all these weird types of shows that are turning people on, you know, which is not surprising, nor is it by mistake. But anyway, this guy came up to her and said, oh, did you know this? And it was some kind of, you know, conspiratorial sort of statement. And she related how shocked she was that she never thought that these people had talked about this. And that's when I stopped and thought, how many times a student will come up after class and say, you know, I swear to God, I never thought you were going to talk about this. I had this happen to me when we were younger, or I woke up one time and A, B, and C happened, or you know, I was having a conversation with my grandmother and she told me about X, Y, and Z, you know, and I trust in my grandmother inherently. So mm-hmm. you get this, you never know who you're talking to, such that if you throw the line out there, it doesn't have to be in a teaching situation like mm-hmm. I have, because I'm a teacher, but instead just one-on-one communication with somebody you trust. You know, you throw a line out there and you say some of these words that would throw up a flag in someone's mind, like spirituality. That's a word that, you know, is universal enough that it can go in and out of someone's ear if they're really not there, if that's not something that even engages them at all. But mm-hmm. if you have someone who actually maybe is interested in some facet of it, when you say the word spirituality, I've noticed that word, as an example, is one of them that really, oh yeah, I mean, all of a sudden somebody, or consciousness is a word that I found that is harmless to the person who's not really awake and aware, but those that are, it's like a trigger. They'll look right at you and be like, oh, yeah, you know, I like to study consciousness. I read a book, you know, maybe Greg Braden's book or something like that, and I thought it was really interesting. That's usually the safe way to feel out if you're, you know, talking with kin, or if you're, you know, you can back off at any moment because you might think someone thinks you're weird because you're talking about these subjects. But that type of let's meet in the middle ground and then progress from there, you'd really be surprised who you might be sitting next to on any given day.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. Okay, so you'd mentioned something that I was interested to ask you about, and you know, you're kind of hinting at, you know, a lot of this you know, alternative research subjects kind of going mainstream. You know, you mentioned ghost hunters. You know, I mean, there's been so much UFO sightings all over the world. You know, in the last few months, it's really picked up, and it's been getting a lot of coverage. You know, and then. You know, kind of more on, like, the conspiracy side of stuff. You know, you got, like, Jesse Ventura show out there. Mm-hmm. It's blowing the lid off of all sorts mm-hmm. of stuff. So, you know, being a teacher and also being someone that, I would consider you a fellow researcher looking into a number of these topics, what's your perspective on these topics going mainstream?
Well, There are a bunch of different arguments I think we could put towards that. Let's just go ahead and look at television today. I mean, you have at any random house in the Western world, you've got a television that probably has 400 stations on it. It was only a matter of time before they've gone through all these number of things to talk about, and reality TV is as awful as it is, so they got to get into something deeper. And I think it was just a matter of time before someone, like, threw the pitch at the network, hey, let's do a show on ghosts. And let's do a show on UFOs. And now that information is transferred so rapidly across the planet that there are so many interest groups, no matter where you are, you can link into them. I mean, you can jump online and find a forum for anything these days. Mm-hmm. The fact that cable TV has 400 stations at any given time, you know, there's always going to be a place for even the more, you know, exotic of subjects. Okay, I mean, how many different cooking shows do they have? It was only a matter of time before they had mysteries, ancient mysteries, historic mysteries, anomalies. And that, I don't think, is A, an accident, because I do feel that there are so many people who have an interest in this, in many, many things. Again, just to revert to my experience, how many times people come up and say, I saw a show on that. Oh, yeah, you know, they were in the Queen's Chamber, and they were talking about some harmonic resonance or something like that, and that's really interesting. What do you know about that? Or, you know, when I was a kid, I used to love UFOs, but that word is so taboo, they kind of, you know, they don't really ever admit that to anybody. Well, now, anybody who is looking for the next hot thing on TV, you can put a show out about this and certainly get a great number of viewers. Okay, now, but to the other half of your question, you know, why do I think it's coming out now? And UFO sightings, you can even say that there are a significant number of UFO sightings to any Joe Schmo on the road, and they're going to be like, what are you talking about? It's not, I don't believe it's so deep into our public. Of course, I don't watch cable TV, but yeah, I know there are shows out there like UFO Hunters and such, but I still don't think it's convinced them. If you want me to say that I think that they're gearing towards, you know, some kind of, you know, public release of information, well, we're seeing that it is already bursting at the seams in many, many ways, and it's making its way into news. Their pattern of releasing this stuff would suggest that there is some kind of like, okay, let's start to release the grip a little bit and let some of this stuff out, so it's not just
slowly condition people to be aware of this. Yeah,
right. I mean, if we're dealing truly with super intelligent extraterrestrial encounters on the planet, then at any given time, the door can get kicked open, and boom, there they are. That type of event applies to many of these issues regarding the world right now. It would appear that through what we're watching across the planet right now, let's take an example of current events. I mean, look what's happening in Northern Africa and the Middle East. Okay, you have a people that are so rearing for a change. They're so pent up and united at needing and wanting a change. It could be across any facet of our culture. It could be the economic grievances people have. It could be straight up access to food. It could be they want governance that is for equality. We have witnessed in just the past month and a half, one person start an entire revolution in Tunisia. Self-immolation provoked and propagated an entire revolution which has spread across the Middle East, and we're at the brink in so many facets of our culture and society and civilizations right now that they're so ready for an instant change. If you watch that pattern of what's happened, that could happen in so many different fields of our world. It could happen as an energy revolution and the unbelievable demand for, you know, us, the governments of the world, to actually do something in truth about our energy crisis that we have. It could happen in regards to freedom of information. It could happen in regards to the governments releasing what they know about, you know, the extraterrestrial intelligence that have engaged the planets all for thousands of years, which we have documented. So in regards to public culture and what we're seeing being released, it's happening not just in these esoteric fields, but we're watching things break. You know, the seams are ripping at you know, these millions and billions of people who are now linked in a way that it hasn't been this way. And for as long as we know, you know, people are connected across the planet and ideas are transferring very quickly. And it's a matter of they're going to lose control of the ability to continue having suppression of knowledge in many, many fields, or suppression of connectivity between people to transfer ideas. And I think that's happening. So
indeed,
I don't know. It's all coming to a head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, look, they just, you know, they had to shut down, the internet over in Egypt, whatever, because
they chose to shut down the internet. Yeah, not wise.
I want to kind of go back just a minute though and say,
sure.
You know, with all this stuff, you could watch the History Channel and see, you know, an expose on any number of different topics or whatever. And you know, like you're saying, you know, some of your students might come to you and say, yeah, you know, I saw it on TV or whatever. But just because it's coming out into the newspapers or magazines, the TV, like, you know, we need to use some discernment, and we need to do our homework for ourselves, because just because it's on TV doesn't mean that it's correct. I mean, we know that, you know, and like the History Channel, I mean, dude, there's only a few corporations that own, you know, any channel that's out there
mm-hmm.
that you name.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, nothing goes on a television, you know, by mistake, with the exception
mm-hmm.
of the random live event wardrobe malfunction or otherwise, that actually gets out into the waves and people actually observe. Nothing gets on to that broadcast medium by mistake. It's only the true alternative news, like this station, like the Veritas show, like other, independently generated, subject-specific shows and communities that where actual real information that isn't doctored and peppered and conditioned for the public at large to ingest, right? But, oh, boy. Well, actually, why don't you go ahead and just repeat the question, because I forgot what you were saying.
I just was pointing out that I think that we need to use discernment,
that's right, discernment.
Whatever source that we're finding the information, we need to do our own homework. And
that's something that discernment is like the $10 word for people that are in the boat that we're in. Okay, everybody says like, oh, you got to use discernment. You're listening to somebody on one of these alternative shows, and they're always at the end, oh, you got to use discernment. You got to use discernment. Well, you know what? That's really tough when we're all venturing into areas where we haven't been before. The books aren't written on this yet. We're truly exploring this and trying to find the information for ourselves. So to say like, you have to use discernment. Like, nobody has a magic ball, and nobody has the ability to truly know if this person's lying. And you know that much truth is riddled with a little bit of disinfo, such that that little bit can offset the entire statement, or vice versa. Most disinfo has a little bit of truth in it. So you know what? That discernment, everyone's always saying, like, you got to use discernment. And you know what? I agree with that, but just because you're saying that doesn't make it any easier for us that are actually really trying to cut through the BS and figure out what is legitimate or not. I mean, Christ, now they can make anything look pretty much real when it comes to some video clip of a UFO, all right? I mean, you see it all the time. Oh, here's a new shot of a UFO over China. Here's one that's going, into the water of a pond in some remote area. And here's the one that's on the surface of the moon. Well, nowadays, dang, it's really hard to use discernment when you're staring at a computer screen regarding a potential UFO visitation. What I have found when it comes to, events like this is that they're usually extremely personal and non-transferable. Nothing's going to convince me by me staring at a screen unless, of course, it's a massive ship appears over, like, New York, something crazy like that, and all of a sudden thousands of tweets and thousands of this and phone calls all over the place. Well, all right. It's either that or some holographic projection. That's one thing. But whenever it comes to true, like, real deep, meaningful experiences, whether UFO or spiritual experiences or, individuals of the experience of the individual, I find that they are non-transferable and incredibly personal. In fact, oftentimes these sorts of events, we don't really have the language to even describe them. Go ahead and try to explain to somebody the connectedness you felt when you reached this moment of meditation about 4 hours in a sweat lodge somewhere, where you all of a sudden were connected to, the environment, every living breath you were taking, you felt the flowers and the leaves move. And, I can relate to those things because I personally have had events that have expanded my mind in ways that my communicative ability cannot even scratch. I don't have the language to describe. We don't have the words, not in the English language, that can, really convey what that sort of connectedness is. It's almost like we're handicapped by this tool of language we're forced to use. When I try to tell someone, like, look, I was here, I was, in a meditative state, it was a week-long meditation seminar, and by the end of it, I was so deeply rooted in and so calm with myself that I was able to just move. My mind was infinite in many directions, and I made this connection. And even those words will never convey, things like that. So already, when it comes to, these subjects, it's very difficult because to use discernment means that you got some rule book to apply. Well, you know what? We don't even have the words sometimes to describe this stuff. So basically, discernment, again, the $10 word in any sort of like esoteric study, and everyone wants to yell out, oh, use discernment. It's almost like a liability in case you were wrong. Then come back and be like, ah, you weren't using discernment. Well, you know what? I'm trying, and hopefully you are trying. You really are. But God bless you if you can actually find a way to prove A or disprove B or describe C or, or convey it to someone else.
It's a really good point, and I understand, the way that your mind works to a certain extent from from our years of knowing each other. And but I guess what I was kind of trying to get at was, you know, basically we need to double check multiple sources, not just mm-hmm. find something on TV, and also that ultimately, sure. I guess I am referring to using our own intuition, you know, basically using your gut. And I know that, you know, some people are a little more gifted with using their head rather than using their intuition or what. You know, we all have our own unique reality lens or our own perspective, you know.
Mm-hmm. Or feelers. Yeah, we have our own feelers.
Yeah.
You know, vice versa. Some people have a more of a gut, intuitive, connected sense than as opposed to, like, the logical left or right brain, whatever you want to call it. Yep.
But, you know, ultimately, like, the balance of both is what we're shooting for, I think.
No, that's a very good point. One of the things,
you know,
I don't know if I'm right or wrong.
It's not an either-or sort of thing.
Right. One of the things I've always said is that, you know, first of all, to a student, for example, you know, don't believe anything that I have to say. Don't even believe what your mom tells you, your dad, any teacher. It doesn't matter what position I'm in here. I could be standing in front of you as a teacher. I could be some guy in the street. Mm. All I can do is introduce a topic to you, show you the door. I can't even open it because that's a choice. A personal choice is to open the door and investigate it. All I can do is stand here on the edge of the door. It's closed, and we're both standing there, and I can look at you and say, this is what I experienced when I actually went through this door and down this path. It might not be the same for you, but I'm going to, if you believe anything I'm saying, this is what I experienced and maybe something that I had happen. So anybody who tells you the truth, you know what? Don't believe the people who tell you the truth, only those who are still seeking it, okay? And really, the only confirmation for anything, it could be any of these vast topics that you cover on this show or in the vast libraries out there in the world, you know, only through personal investigation are you really going to, you know, be able to discover and confirm anything to yourself. And that, from my point of view, is what's really annoying about academia, if I may.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because oftentimes because there isn't a study already written on it or it's not agreed upon or, shall I say, mainstream science, you know, the people in academia will be quick to condemn the suggestion of any sort of possibility of these things that are esoteric, these things that are outside of the mainstream traditional academic line. And you know, Einstein said it best, you know, condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance.
Okay,
nothing, I think, is more, ironic is the fact that, you know, people in academia don't investigate. They will just quick to poo-poo or to shuttle something off to the side because they had never heard of it before. Yeah, it's not already made, figured out, and so on and so forth. And how many times in our history has that been just completely blown away? Like, I tell my students in 1900, Lord Kelvin, of the Kelvin temperature scale, mind you, famously said to an international group of physicists, you know, we've discovered everything there is to know about physics. The rest is fine-tuning. He actually said that. And then what happened? You know, 5 years later, Einstein came out with a general theory of relativity and just blew away, you know, this defined little paradigm box of physics and just reshaped everything, just flipped the whole world of science on its head. How many people said that it would be impossible for anything heavier than air to fly? And, you know, well, I rest my case. So, I mean, we are ripe with these examples of people putting glass ceilings upon themselves as if no more innovation or discovery is to be made, but it's really the height of arrogance to think that, you know, the laws that govern our world, our five senses that make up, you know, empiricism and tangible senses are all that govern our world. Well, you know what? You've never actually had something like this happen to you. You may never have actually investigated or journeyed down this road of personal meditation, of internal exploration, of quantum mechanics. Okay, there's so many examples where we're breaking at the seams of what we traditionally know. And it's only a matter of time, man. It's a part of human evolution. We're gonna break into new fields, and I feel that it's gonna start to reshape our future pretty soon.
Indeed, there's a new paradigm that is emerging. So, Ben, for, you know, we're moving through the time here really quick. I want to ask you something else here, man, because you know, I got to attend, I don't know, your class on every Monday for what, a couple of months. So, you know, a good couple handfuls of classes I got to see.
Yeah, it was fun
and
having you in the front seat.
Huh?
Go ahead, I'm sorry. It was fun having you sitting there challenging the things I said, but I'm sorry. Go ahead and... throwing these rocks at me while I was teaching. But go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead. Yep.
Well, it was awesome. But, I noticed, a reoccurring theme being expressed regarding us as individuals taking personal responsibility and, realizing that we affect our world, our lives, the lives of others, and reality in general. So, could you elaborate on the ways that you convey this in class?
Oh, sure. So you're kind of like gracing, kind of scratching a topic that is of I think significant interest in many, many facets of our society, whether it's physical science or people wondering about consciousness interaction with matter studies, right? So if you're going to bring up a subject like, I wonder if our thoughts affect our environment or ourselves, you've got many angles to go about doing that. And I would hint at that because I can say, well, there are these studies that suggest that conscious thought can, for example, interact with matter. And, you can talk about the quantum mechanics. We're understanding that just observing an experiment affects the outcome of it. So really, even at the atomic level, we have been able to prove and observe multiple times and replicate, if you want to use the scientific method of making a controlled experiment, observing it, rerunning it, doing it in multiple locations, confirming it, trusting your sources, and so on. But then, of course, there are people like, well, yeah, that's quantum mechanics is still a pretty hard to grapple with area of science. It's really, quantum mechanics, that word is even too big for me to understand. Like, I want to know if I can actually affect, the area around me by my thoughts. I want to know if I can affect my health. I want to know if my thoughts affect the person next to me. And to kind of bring it down to earth, I reference Dr. Emoto's work, for example, with the consciousness experiments on the water, and how he is trying to apply a Western sort of scientific method to subjects and statements and concepts and principles that the yogis and the gurus have been telling us for millennia, thousands of years. That you actually affect the area around you. You affect the people. Conscious thought, directed thought, intentional thought waves, however you want to call it, has an effect on what's around you. And I do believe that science is now starting to wake up a little bit and, starting to think about how they would measure this. Now, it's not a matter of just confirm or deny. The Western world needs to build upon itself a path of knowledge to lead to being able to answer a question of such. And so to just say, yes, I know that I can heal myself of my thoughts, or the power of thought can affect people around me. Well, for any sort of scientist that's locked into a system of thought, a system of inquiry, you gotta build with them together the means in which they can actually start to tangibly understand this. They have to be able to test it. They have to be able to observe it, postulate it, write a hypothesis on it, experiment, redefine that hypothesis until it becomes strong in a theory. A theory that, under all sorts of testing, can't get knocked down, because all you got to do is disprove a theory once, and it's done. The foundation's pulled out from under it. Back to your question, I try to reference, some of the scientific or close to scientific, scientifically accepted studies that I've done that suggest that conscious matter interactions, actually are a lot more tangible in our world than we think we can observe at any given time. So I do my homework before the class, and I'll pull up these different examples. You can look at the particle theories and the different experiments of light shooting through this double beam slit experiments, where you're observing a particle moving through it, and just that observation will change the pattern of display on the backside. You can talk about Dr. Emoto or any of the other ones that we actually brought up in class. Right now I'm blanking on them, but
It comes to mind that you did something too that was just like very tangible. The semester that I was up there to just show the kids, look, we can make a difference. Like, if we put our minds to this, we can do something. And you guys put in a well.
That's right. Yeah, I was suggestive. I was basically being suggestive of what the power of that can do. I mean, there. That was a teaching moment in and of itself, because I was learning myself, how it was affecting me that we had a goal to provide clean drinking water for a school that was in need in Africa, And, you know, I tried to figure out a way to get the students to work on these projects that would raise the money. The goal was $5,000. We had 90 days to do it, and we did it. We actually got $5,001, right? But the objective of it was not just to raise the money, but to just show the students that they had the ability to do anything that they put their minds to. This task, mm-hmm. first of all, was not hard to attain, but the feeling that they would get, the momentum that would be built inside of them when you accomplish something like that, was even more powerful than the dollars itself. That sort of momentum and understanding of their potential, their ability to create the world around them, just try, put their conscious thought and intention into getting this done, then the pieces would fall into place and they'd get aligned, and that which you were looking for would be answered. That it was really hard to suggest something like that in a class. It was really only when I had the dedicated students around me that I knew would stand by me and we're going to get this done. But you were there for those moments and those nighttime when we meet at night, and I'm like, look, we can do this. If we put our intention and our thought towards this, and not just sit and pray, but actually put our true energy into this and start to create, we will be met equally on the other side by events that will help us get this done. Now, that is vague, okay? It's coming from some teacher telling you that. That's a little, you know, hard to wrap your hands around. But I was trying to invoke the fact that, you know, the universe responds to that. And when you put intention out there, you're usually met. I'm not saying that prayers get answered, but I am saying that that energy, like attracts like, and when you put your mind to a goal and you all work together, things did end up working out for us. And again, it's hard for me to make the connections, because you can easily say things like, oh yeah, well, how do you explain that, you know, earthquake happens and I'm just praying for someone to come and save me and they never come and get me, or some other example where true intention and conscious thought didn't make it work. But, you know, I was trying to seed the minds with the fact that they have connection, they have control, and they're very, very, all of us humans are very, very powerful, and we can do and create great things. And I think there is a lot more to understand than just a matter of raising money and getting this done. Was what was going to come from this seed of planting this well and planting the idea that anybody can do anything. And you know, some of those students have gone on and recreated the experiment, recreated this project, working in different in different villages in Africa, and are actually going and doing their own fundraisers. They've come to me and say, oh, I got an idea this semester, bam, bam, bam. And what's happened is, you know, this thought has seeded itself and propagated and grown like a tree, and so now they are creating as well and inspiring others and whatnot, and things are coming to them, and they're making things happen that are good. And, you know, it's not by anything that I did. It really was just kind of an experiment. It's something I wanted to do. It seems like the right thing to do, and I had this little army of kids in front of me, the students, and the means to get it done, and an idea. So I just went down that path. They chose to come with me. We made it happen, and now they're doing the same thing. So I don't know. Try to put it together how you think my answer to that is. This is.
I don't know, man. All I know is that I thought it was really cool, and you know, I was just like, man, I wish I had a teacher like this, man, when I was, you know, in school. But
that's an honor.
I do get to have a teacher like this, you know.
Rock on, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it looks like we're getting pretty close to the top of the hour. Is there any, you know, closing remarks of encouragement or inspiration for folks that are walking a path of awakening or transcendence? You know, whether they be, you know, veteran researchers or practitioners, or maybe you're just completely fresh.
Well,
today, what would you say?
That's you know, for me to give some kind of statement as if I have any answers or know anything. I appreciate, you know, what you're invoking, but just to tap onto what I said before, like, you may surprise yourself, and go ahead and go out on a limb, because what do you really have to lose by throwing a line out there and just testing the waters of the people around you in regards to some sort of subject? And you can, I know if you just sit and think about it, you can find a way to broach a topic and not be too risque, right? For all of us who think about these things, you probably wouldn't really talk to your coworkers about them. You probably don't really, even your family, you probably have to keep some of these things from, right? You may be surprised, and I would just say, go ahead and throw it out there, because the responses I get by throwing this line out in class, 90% of it goes right over their heads, but then the 10% of people that hear what I'm saying, they come to me afterwards and said, you said this in class. Were you talking about, and all of a sudden it's like, bam, there it is. Mm-hmm. Wow, great. Yes, let's go get coffee because let's talk about this. And then, boom, there you go. And for a closing remark, I would say try to just engage and connect to the world around you because really, really, what do you have to lose? But what do you have to gain is actually more appropriate a question to ask. You have so much to gain. And I was connected to you only because I took a chance and went out on some sort of, you know, conscious trip for a meditative trip, right? Meditation trip that we went on, and I met you. And because of that, my life has blossomed with all the wonderful things we've done, the people we've been connected to, and the depth of the depth of things I now know about, and that which I get to explore and engage in my world, and that which we have created together. You know, only because I reached out and asked, say, for example, someone I never thought I'd get to talk to, like Mr. Mel Fabregas of the Veritas Show. I took a chance. I wrote to him. I said, "Hey, you're interviewing X this next week. Can I, you know, ask you a question? Maybe you'll ask him." And then, bam, all of a sudden he's like, "Oh, yes, please, that'd be great." And we start this conversation. And then what happens, you know, 6 or 9 months later, I get to meet him at the ranch with you. Over the summer, we got Mel to come there, and it's worked out so great. And you know, if you engage the world around you, the world will engage you in return. And, mm-hmm. And that's what growth is all about. That's what exploring is all about. If you don't, you never know what just walked by you any given day. And that's where I'd say, you know, every single one of us can do something just to connect to those around us, because you would be surprised. It doesn't matter what field it is. You'd be surprised. If you can talk pretty in-depthly about A, B, and C, then you could probably, you know, talk to somebody about X, Y, and Z, even though it's not your bread and butter and your cup of tea. If you can have the depth to go there for those subjects, you can probably meet them there, and you'd be surprised who could be sitting right next to you mm-hmm. at any given time. That's what I would say to the world.
Well, very, very well put, good sir, I have to say. And, you know, I've been inspired by your speaking method, and, you know, you obviously have a very healthy throat chakra, and I've learned a lot from you, man. And you know, the more that one does talk about this sort of stuff, the easier it becomes. And so, yeah, I think that your closing remarks are quite poignant, man. And we do need to, you know, have faith in ourselves and be confident in ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, we're all in this together, as we've seen. You know, recent events and what's to unfold in our near future. We are all in this together. Only together are we going to, you know, move through this next phase, move through this transition. And, you know, we are all one. I guess if I could put one last, you know, finishing statement there, I think it's a matter of human evolution where science is getting to the point where it's understanding and finding the connectedness of humanity and the environment. The science is getting to the point where they're realizing that everything is connected to everything. And that happens to be something that, again, the yogis and the gurus and the prophets of all the ages and all the years have been telling us since day one that everything is one. And I think that there will come a point where science will catch up with that, these principles that seem to be pretty mainstay in many, many faiths and religion and so on and so forth. And that inspires me because I like to see where the breakthroughs are in science, a lot with NASA supercomputer technology and quantum mechanics and A, B, and C. All these different sciences are starting to get it. They're starting to pick up on it, and let's hope it's in, you know, enough time to actually make a difference in the world around us before mm-hmm. other things start coming to a head. So I'm excited. I mentioned, you know, we live during the most exciting time to be alive, hands down. And, you know, we're all here. We're all in the right place at the right time, so let's make the most of it.
Yep, here's to the new paradigm. Well, Ange, I can't thank you enough, man, for coming on the show. And
my pleasure.
You know,
I'd like
to get you back on when James is back, and you know, maybe you could come on and talk about your geological perspective on Earth changes, and you know, maybe some current events or whatever. Because there's a ton of other stuff that I'm sure James would get into with you. I had a bunch of other questions, but time is running short, so
fantastic.
I'm going to say goodnight, my friend.
Well, thanks so much. It was a great talking with you again. Hope to see you soon.
All right, Benj. All right, you have a great night.
All right, be great.
So,
bye.
Folks, that was Benjamin Cavallari. And, you know, Benj is a regular contributor to the Veritas Show with Mel Fabregas, as we were talking about. He's often supporting Mel with a baseline scientific background for the subjects associated with Veritas' upcoming guests. And Benj actually appeared on last year's Veritas interview recorded here at ESETI with Brooks Agnew. So, you know, if you're interested in hearing a little bit more from Benj, you could check that out over on the Veritas site. So, yeah, it's about time to sign off. I want to give a shout-out to our good friend from the ranch, Mr. Sun. He's over in Hawaii. We love you, good sir. And, yeah, to everyone else out there, continue to do the inner work. And here's to the new paradigm. I hope you all have a great evening, and we'll see you next time. Peace.